Former members of the Anglican Communion in the United States received good news this week with the announcement on New Year's Day of the creation of a special ordinariate in keeping with Pope Benedict XVI's 2009 Apostolic Constitution Anglicanorum Cetibus. The personal ordinariate of the Chair of St. Peter will serve former Anglican groups and clergy in the United States who wish to become Catholic. We spoke with the new head of the ordinariate, Father Jeffrey Steenson.
All trying to kind of come to terms with the technical canonical language, which is not something that's natural to many of us. But the idea of ordinariate is a word that was chosen because already there is a model in the military ordinariate, the structure for military chaplains who serve across diocesan territorial boundaries. And so I think that was a model that was used when the Holy See erected this. And it's personal because it relates to the gathering up of people that have a liturgical and ecclesial culture that would be distinct from the territorial diocese, which encompasses obviously every Catholic soul within a geographical region. So the idea of personal is that it relates to a unique group of people, those that are coming from the Anglican tradition, and it's an ordinariate in the sense that it has a juridical structure that is similar to that of a diocese.
And you have been elected to lead this ordinariate. A difference, perhaps, between you and the head of the military ordinariate is that you are not you're not a Catholic bishop, but you will have care of souls for the people who are in the or under the ordinariate, right?
Yes. Oh, yes, that's right. I was ordained in the Catholic Church under the pastoral provision. Because I'm a married priest, I'm not able to receive episcopal ordination because of the very ancient traditions of the Church on that subject. But people have told me that it's almost the second best thing. I'll have all the headaches of a bishop without any of the honors. So I think that the idea, though, is that there is this responsibility to care for souls, to look after the priests who will be incarnated in the ordinariate and the lay faithful that will become members as well. So I think all of the responsibilities that a bishop has will accrue to the work of the ordinary of the ordinariate.
Texas is a place that, if you know a little bit about the history of the rapprochement between many members of the Anglican Communion, former members of the Anglican Communion and the Catholic Church, it makes a good bit of sense, I suppose. There are several Anglican use parishes already there, if I'm not mistaken. A lot of these folks, when they swam the Tiber, as we say, when they came into full communion with Rome, did so not knowing whether they would be able to keep permanently either their worship spaces or their liturgical traditions. Can you talk with us a little bit about how you're dealing with those things now? And also, more importantly, I think, probably, about how you are preserving that which the Holy Father described as noble and holy in the Anglican liturgical and ecclesial tradition.
Yes, well, the Anglican use parishes, and you mentioned the three in Texas, are canonically they're personal parishes in their local dioceses, and so the Diocese of Fort Worth, the Archdiocese of San Antonio, and here the Archdiocese of Galveston-Houston possess these parishes. And now the hope is that they will be able to be transferred to the ordinariate from the local diocese. And that's a process that will require a lot of patient collaboration with the bishops and the finance councils of each diocese, because there's a lot of practical questions that have to be resolved But the anticipation is that that we will be able to welcome these pastoral provision or Anglican use parishes into the ordinariate, and they will become very important for the stability, the future stability of the ordinariate, because they're already established parish communities. It was in the 1990s that the Holy See approved a mass translation, well, really a set of liturgical texts called the Book of Divine Worship, which took elements from the Book of Common Prayer that was in use in the Episcopal Church in the United States, and shaped those texts in small ways to bring them into closer conformity with the Catholic faith and Catholic teaching. And those are the liturgical texts that are authorized for use, and ultimately, or that's what we'll be starting with in the ordinariate as well, is the Book of Divine Worship. Ultimately, that might change because the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, as well as the congregation that deals with liturgical texts, divine worship, they're working together to try to help form an international liturgical text that would serve all of the ordinariate communities in the English-speaking world. But that will take time. And so at the beginning, we'll continue to use the Book of Divine Worship for worship for the masses in the ordinariate congregations.
Listening to you talk here, it reminded me of something that is, I think, extremely important. But to those of us who are close to these things, we sometimes forget that it doesn't necessarily go without saying. And that is that the ordinariate has been set up, its original purpose, it's not its only purpose, but its original purpose is to create a space for people who have already come to the conclusion that they are Catholic in every way, that they have a spiritual communion with Rome and with the Universal Church in the Holy Father. The earliest groups who have availed themselves of this ordinariate and the people for whom it was set up, you know, they had in mind, were groups of people who have been ardently searching for a way to preserve and to concretize their communion.
Yes, the texts like the Apostolic Constitution, the constitution that created the ordinariates, are very, very clear about the fact that this is a response from the Holy See to the aspirations of those who are seeking to come into full communion. It's not an initiative. It's not a project to tempt people away from their ecclesial communities that they belong to now. But it's a response to their aspirations after they have come to the conscientious decision that that they need to seek full communion. And so that's got to be the key element of this. And we hope and we'll work hard to keep the basic ecumenical protocols active and in force, that this isn't intended to be a sheep-stealing exercise in any sense of the word. In fact, I think it might be a challenge for some Anglicans who, if they are only interested in finding a place where they can preserve their liturgical traditions and not have to deal with the challenges and the stresses of life in the Anglican Communion today, if they're only looking for a place to do the liturgy, I don't think the ordinariate will be a very good home for them, because we're all about the business of becoming more deeply Catholic and coming into full communion with the Church. And the liturgy is the means to that end, but it's not the end itself. The end is full communion with the See of Peter.
But the liturgy is the source and summit of Christian life, and in order to have it, you need officers, as it were, to offer the official act of worship. I'm thinking here of the priests of your ordinariate, many of whom are in formation, a term that I was surprised to learn a little while ago that you use, because these are, right now anyway, men who have been in active ministry, some for many, many years and even decades. Can you talk with us a little bit about that?
Sure. The we call it, based on, I think, all the national Episcopal conferences are required to have a program for priestly formation. And essentially, we have the same thing as well. And I think it is actually indeed called the Plan for Priestly Formation that was approved by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith last year. And it's an extremely generous document because it does recognize that most of these men have trained in an accredited theological seminary and have more or less followed a parallel path in their training for priestly ministry as Catholic priests have. But there obviously are some differences because, you know, it's the Anglican tradition and not the Catholic tradition that that is they have been formed into. And so the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith has approved a plan which takes the basic text of the Catechism of the Catholic Church and looks at it with some care and identifies those areas where there may be differences between the Anglican and Catholic traditions. And that's the subject matter for the priestly formation programs that, well, already one has happened in England and Wales last spring, and the one that will happen here in the United States will be a very similar approach as well, where we just basically work through the catechism and try to identify those areas where there may be differences, to make sure that the men are adequately and properly formed in the intellectual formation aspect of their priestly training. The Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith specifically states that they accept that the previous ministry of these men is adequate in terms of their human, their spiritual, and pastoral formation. So our program of priestly formation specifically addresses the intellectual formation area. And that's why it's able to move very quickly. We will start at the beginning of February and we will finish in early May, basically working on Saturdays using a long-distance learning setup at St. Mary's Seminary in Houston. So they don't have to travel here. They'll be able to do it on the internet. And they should, at that point, be ready to be ordained sometime in Pentecost this year.
That is very quick if you look at it measured against the years of formation that most seminarians go through. Are you looking at a longer-term formation for men who begin to discern vocations from within the ordinariate as it begins to grow?
Oh, yes. When that happens, as that happens, they will be studying side by side with their counterparts in the Latin dioceses. So their formation will be identical to a man that is going through a major seminary for a Latin diocese. And the idea is that the complementary norms of the ordinariate require that training be done side by side with the men of the Latin dioceses.
Are the men who are going to be candidates for the priesthood in the ordinariate going to be able to maintain the ordinariate's traditional disciplines with regard to clergy?
You know, certainly the expectation is, and the Holy See has been very, very clear about this in the texts, the expectation is that the norm of celibacy will prevail in these succeeding generations of clergy. Though there is in the Constitution, or we're in the complementary norms. I've just forgotten which text it's in. There is left open the possibility that on a case-by-case basis, the Holy See would be willing to revisit this question of celibacy for these priests coming in that were seeking priesthood. And I guess we just leave that in the hands of God at this point. Certainly the expectation is that as we grow in this wonderful new thing, that we will embrace the same disciplines that our brothers in the Latin priesthood do.
I'm sure we could go on for hours and hours and hours, but maybe if I think you're in an elevator and you have 45 seconds to express your feelings about this creation of the ordinariate, go ahead. Here we are. The doors are closed.
Yes, I think that in Anglicanism there has always been this deep-seated desire for Catholic unity. It was in our DNA because we came from the Catholic Church, and so I always think of it as terms of the instincts of a migratory bird, that want to come home, and that's I think the heart and soul of what the ordinariate is all about is what Lumen Gentium, Section 8, the Constitution or the Constitution on the Church speaks about, this inner dynamic toward Catholic unity that exists in other ecclesial traditions. And that inner dynamic inexorably brings us home to Rome. And that is the real heart and soul of the ordinariate to me. It is this desire to be at one with Peter and the apostles and his successors and those who are gathered around him. My favorite text from St. Irenaeus of Lyon about this question is that it is necessary that all churches be in accord with this church, the Church of Rome, because of her more excellent apostolic foundations. She's the church that was built on Peter and Paul. And that is the vision that we have. That's the goal that we have. And we want to arrive in the full life of the Catholic Church with much joy in our hearts.